Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Interrogang podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Reed. My rewind pick this time will take you back to a conversation from the prehistoric age of season one, but it's a timeless topic. This is a discussion from our episode, There's a Fine Line Between Courageous and Stupid, in which we argue for or against the rules of typography, both written and unwritten. Turns out, sometimes you gotta break some rules to make an omelet. Enjoy!
So then let's take this into a bigger conversation. Kyle and I were talking about this, and we were wondering about just this idea of rule breaking in typography. When it's okay, when it's not, is it ever okay? Is it just downright ignorant? Because here we have three examples that I just talked about where some basic rules were broken, spacing or legibility or uniformity, mm-hmm. and they were all trying to serve a greater purpose.
Yep.
Is that a bold gesture or one that was bound to fail? So let's start with this conversation of breaking the rules in type. And I guess we need to start, Kyle, with defining the rules.
Yeah.
This is going to be a pretty subjective thing, but what do you think are just some hard and fast, every type designer knows these, you should follow these laws of typography?
Yes.
Laws of type design.
Right on. Yeah. So there are obviously loads of rules of type design. Some of them are written in stone. Some of them are unwritten rules, like in baseball. Some of them, not everybody's heard of. Some of them everybody's heard of and doesn't care about. There's a lot of quote-unquote rules in designing typefaces. But there are a couple of standard concepts that can sum up all these rules. And to me, these five ideas are kind of central in, you know, what is good or considered good typography, useful typography, or interesting or applicable typography. Number one is uniformity. I think it's pretty well known that when you're making a typeface, you're making a set of letters, not just a set of beautiful letters. I think that's a Matthew Carter quote, and I probably botched it, but there is, you know, uniformity is at the heart of a typeface. Lettering, you can go crazy on each letter and be something totally different, but the consistency to a line of text is what makes it visual language and not just fancy writing. Number two is spacing. How those uniform black on white or white on black forms end up next to each other creates a relationship. And, you know, spacing is just as important as creating the glyphs themselves. So that's something that a lot of people mess with. Some people see that as a rule to be broken, mm-hmm. but spacing is an inherent part of typography that you just can't ignore. Third is legibility. This is obviously up for a big debate. I think there's a lot of people out there that don't care that much about it. Graphic designers especially have this debate mm-hmm. over whether a typeface can be used legibly. But in this context of creating a typeface, legibility is kind of core and important. So your font is something that ultimately wants to be read. So legibility and readability are core tenets. Communication is number four. How you're communicating is just as important as what you're communicating. And how you're communicating is the job of the typeface. What you're communicating is the job of the writer. So when designing a typeface, you have to be responsible for that, how the language is being communicated side of that equation. And lastly, attitude or style is something that I think I would consider a core rule for typography. We have loads of genres. A lot of people try to classify fonts all the time. There's this human desire to organize and categorize the wide width and breadth of typography. So when you're designing a font, attitude of the letters, the style of the letters, what genre you're in. That's a core rule. And when any of these five principles of type design are broken, you can start to either get something really great or you can start to get something really ungreat. And there are some graphic designers out there that have made their name off of breaking all of these rules. And there are lots of people out there that really respect when all of these rules are followed to a T. So,
right.
Yeah, it's a full set. I think a good place to start with if we're talking about rule breaking.
And we've seen, even in the past 15 weeks of doing this podcast, examples of, if not breaking these rules, pushing on these rules.
Yes.
We've discussed different fonts. We discussed DJR's Extend-O-Matic, which mm-hmm. was pushing the boundaries of what you can do with a variable font.
Spacing.
My old friend Nouvelle Noir, which admits it's not legible. These are examples where the creator of these font is making it clear that we're seeing what we can do and push the boundaries. We're not just breaking the rules and saying we're good.
Right.
So if we're looking at, say, using the example of these movie fonts or show fonts that I brought up, which we will yep. have a link in the newsletter to screenshots of these so you can see what we're talking about. Are these risks worth taking? Because obviously, as we see with these, if you take these risks, you're going to get some crap because the internet exists. And obviously they got away with it. They were in the final product. Mm-hmm. But is that a risk? Usually, is that a risk worth taking?
Yeah, this is something that is important to address. Right now we're talking about people who use type as opposed to design type. Mm-hmm. And each one of them addresses those five principles that I mentioned in their own way. But in the case of Loki, that was the designer choosing on a conceptual basis to
right.
break a couple of rules on how they were using typography. And we can have a totally separate conversation about folks who design typography and try to break the rules. These cases are really good examples of
yeah, let's stick with use as our base for this discussion.
Exactly. So yeah, it's true. You have to consider, are those risks worth taking when you're looking at typefaces and how they're communicating? Josh, we kind of broke it down into the core question at the core of this other bigger question, which is rule breaking courageous? Is it hubris? Or is it stupid?
That's right. I think this is a core question. I think this even moves away from use of type and is basically a good question to ask yourself in any facet of life. Is your choice to break the rules courageous? Is it hubris? Or is it just plain stupid?
Yep.
So what would you say, either talking about your personal view or however you want to frame this, but what do you see rule breaking as?
I personally see it as courageous if, and I have a clarifier on this,
mm-hmm.
if you have the skills to back it up.
Right.
If you're operating outside of your scope of ability, it's probably stupid to break the rules. Because you're probably not doing it with any deft level of skill. But I personally think rule breaking is there for a reason. It's rules are made to be broken. I do believe that is an idiom that you can kind of harness and own. And it takes courage to say, I'm not going to do things the way that they were totally outlined to do. But yeah, you have to take stock of your own skill set and say, can I actually land that plane? Can I get that done?
Right. When we're talking about the use, and particularly the use, say, in film, it's really about serving the greater purpose of the story you're trying to tell. You are part mm-hmm. of that enterprise to tell the story, which is why I like the Loki example. I think it's a cool way for typography to be part of the game.
Yes.
And in that case, I would classify that as courageous because it's not a conventional choice, but it is something that's striking and obviously getting people talking. At least
right.
it's getting us talking.
Yeah, all those people talking out there, who were in revolt of it would have you think that it was stupid to break those rules.
Right.
But only in retrospect or in the presence of total context can you really make that judgment.
Right. And so when you're using fonts, you are making design decisions. You are,
exactly.
And that's the real key, because that's part of, I think, my frustration too, seeing the animosity towards the Loki design when it came out.
Yeah.
It seems pretty simple to ask the question, okay, why would they do this?
Right.
And still, you may to this day say it's not a good enough reason to say he's chaotic, he's all over the place, and so the fonts are too. Mm-hmm. I buy that. That's maybe
might be
not,
a little on the nose, but
might
it
be
works.
A little on the nose. But at least it you can answer the question, why did they do this?
Yes.
There are examples, plenty of examples, and I think even the other two that I highlighted, the Deathstalker and the favorite one, are harder to answer the question, why did you do this?
Mm-hmm.
With the favorite in the end credits, you completely remove legibility. You completely take away from the work of the people on the film because we can't read their names or their jobs.
Yeah.
So you're not serving the greater purpose.
Yes.
In the case of Deathstalker, you have removed legibility. You've added crap that doesn't need to be there. And you've done nothing to get us in the mood of this crappy fantasy 80s flick. And so that's the real distinction, I think. And that's... anyone who's ever created anything is listening to that and thinking, yeah, duh.
Right.
But I think sometimes that takes a back seat to some of the design decisions you make. You've always got to keep the purpose and the why at the forefront.
That's right. Yeah, ultimately, typography is a set of design decisions, and you can't just do whatever you want.
Right.
You do have to... any application of typography is a decision, and to judge it, you should know the entire context and conceptual backing for it to be considered courageous or good work or successful rule breaking. I imagine when that Loki thing came out in 2019, everybody was like, "Yeah, my sixth grader could do that. Just draw
right?
a bunch of different fonts." Like that's. You're not seeing the full context there.
That is exactly a complaint I saw that someone said my sixth grader could cut this out of magazines.
Yes,
was the quote.
Right, and that just shows the limited imagination of a lot of internet trolls.
So let me take this conversation a little bit in a different direction. Kyle, do you feel that in general are type designers too safe?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Or do you see a lot of intentional rule breaking to push further?
If we're going to jump back to the type design side of this equation instead of the type use.
Good point. I should have made that clarification a little clearer that yes, I'm talking more about just the intention, the rule breaking intentions of type designers now.
Yeah. So this is going out on a limb because I think type designers have been debating this for, each one of their generations. But I would say that on the whole, yes, type designers these days are too safe. I think that there's an economic advantage to being safe. So
right.
Seeing that type these days is really a more of an economic product than it is an artistic one. Pete, you're going to find a lot of safe typefaces. Right. I think we've discussed this.
We've discussed it that people need their sensible serifs or their clean sans because that's what they need to use.
Right. But, you saw a lot of typefaces back in the 20s, in the 30s, even in the 60s, and then in the 70s with photo lettering. Like, there was an explosion of really expressive risk-taking. And I think we're on the cusp of that. So not everybody is a safe, uncourageous designer. But I think we're about to see, how courageous type designers can be. There's been some kind of permission given in the last few years to let people start to be adventurous again. It's kind of exciting.
Do you think, and again, this is coming back to type design, is the greater risk being too careful or being too crazy?
Yeah, that's a really existential thought. I think the greater risk is to be too careful. I think when people see adventurous type design or adventurous creative work of any kind, they can at least see it and respect it as being, okay, they put themselves out there, you know? So when someone sees a piece of very unadventurous type design, completely forgettable, that's just unfortunate. So the greater risk to me is not being risky enough.
I might argue the other side on that one, I guess it's how you define risk, which we don't have to go into a bullet point of how we define risk.
Yeah.
But if you look at something that's too crazy, if you make something that's pushing on these rules, people are going to notice that. Like I said, you're going to hear it from the internet, from Twitter. You are putting yourself out there to hear about all the ways that it doesn't work or it blows. If you're too careful, if you're really aiming for usability and yeah. risking being bland, well, someone's going to see that and be like, okay, I can use that. So I don't know where I see as much risk to, even if I'm doing what's already been done, mm-hmm. it can be used. Whereas if I push myself into something that I don't know if this can be used, I hope so. I hope it is the next big thing. But that's if right. it isn't, then it's just not going to go anywhere.
I think that's the definition of being courageous. You are taking a risk there and going into the unknown. It may not ever be useful or used, but at least you went there.
Or that's maybe cool. It's the definition of being stupid. That's what we're just not sure.
There is a fine line between courageous and stupid. Two sides of the same coin, I guess.
That's a great line.
And that's it for this week's Interrogang. Big thanks, as always, to Andrew Spheris for editing this and every episode and for putting up with Josh and I. He is a true gentleman. Season 4 starts up again soon, so stay tuned for an announcement of new episodes to come. And as always, thank you for being a part of the Interrogang. We will see you next time.
Oh, God. Finally done.
Josh fell asleep.